trumping the NHL trade deadline. Alexander Ovechkin scores 7-6-7, and we lean on somebody who's covered him from his rookie year. It's an unbelievable conversation of stories that also gets into some deadline talk. It's all coming up on The Chirp with Darren Millard.
Oh, how'd that feel, old man?
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
I'm going to run you. I'm just waiting for my shift. That's a disgrace. That's a disgrace. What a joke.
It doesn't always happen this way, but there's moments during the course of a winter where the stars just align and you come up with an idea and you're planning to go down this path, and then everything just happens to be, there's road stops everywhere and there's great tourist stops, and you're going down this path and it's like, this is the best trip ever. That's what we have today with Tariq El-Bashir from The Athletic and Turner, and as well a former reporter with The Washington Post. And you covered the Washington Capitals for a very long time. We're going to talk trade deadline today, and we will, buddy, but Alexander Ovechkin just happens to become an airplane last night and land the 767 and move into third place. So give me an idea. What was it like in the rink last night when Ovi did his thing?
It was electric. And it's funny, over the past three seasons or so, he's been steadily climbing the list. I mean, he's been checking off the big names one at a time, you know, Mario Lemieux, Brett Hull, Marcel Dion. Like, he's been climbing the list. And, you know, I feel like maybe there's been a little bit of milestone fatigue that it's set in a little bit with the fans and with the media, but this one was different. You know, being the sixth all-time goal scoring leader, I mean, that's cool. Fifth is nice. Fourth is, oh, that's getting up there. Third, when you get into the top three, and even Alex acknowledged this to me the other day, once you get into the top three, like, that changes the conversation a little bit. There's just something about that number. I'm not really sure what it is. But when you only have two guys in front of you and you're third and you just passed Jaromir Jagr, you're the all-time leading goal scorer amongst European players. There's just something different. The place erupted. The Capitals secured permission from hockey ops to let everyone spill over the boards and come onto the ice to congratulate them. You know, I quickly fumbled and got my phone out and, you know, took a little quick video of it because these are the things that, you know, you know, as a reporter who's covered Alex since his rookie season, like, these are things you're going to tell your grandchildren about. I was in the building when he passed Jagr. I mean, so I, you know, and the fans, same deal. Like, everyone's trying to grab their phones, everyone's standing up watching, and just, you know, throughout the night, every time he got the puck on his stick, like, you could just hear like a crescendo of, oh, is it coming? And he had a couple where he had a clean look on Semyon Varlamov, but got stopped. And so when he finally did it, and it was a big goal in the game too, the place just erupted.
What stands out to me, Tariq, is the fact that when I thought about it, only Wayne Gretzky and Gordie Howe are above him. Like, yeah. It wasn't the number. It was only those two guys have more goals than him.
Yeah, it's amazing. And like I said, he's been checking off these greats, you know, like one every couple of months now, sometimes two on a single night with one goal. I mean, it's been kind of a whirlwind over the last 2 to 3 seasons. But now, you know, now that he's got Howe in his crosshairs, I mean, he's going to pass Howe, by my calculations, if he keeps playing the way he's playing, he's going to pass him by the All-Star break next year. Then he's only going to have Wayne Gretzky in front of him. I mean, now then it's going to be weird because then it's going to be a long wait to the next one, right? Then it's going to be like three seasons. And the questions are going to be, can he keep going? Is Father Time catching up? That's where I think it's going to get really interesting, is just once he gets past Howe, I think that's a given. It's going to be that long wait until he starts approaching Gretzky. But I mean, just, you know, having covered this guy since he was 18 years old, 19 years old, and you know, seeing him, you know, get to third place overall, just amazing to have been a part of it and to have been able to chronicle it.
I'm going to take one of those detours now, and because we're going to get more into deeper into your relationship with Ovi and his career and how he's changed and evolved and deeper into the person. But so the players came off the bench last night, and that was amazing. That was like 70s-ish, the way the players all poured off the bench for a goal. They didn't do it in Vancouver when Kuznetsov scored, but we all thought Ovi had got the record. I just thought that was perfect timing that they didn't do it then, because that would have been awkward.
That would have been really awkward. So they had permission in Vancouver as well from Hockey Ops to do the same thing. They did it when he scored number 700, and I believe it was against New Jersey. Everyone came over the boards and went to congratulate him. You got to get permission from the league to do it. The other team has to agree to it as well. So the other teams were nice about it and have agreed. They realized it's a big milestone. But yeah, you know, it's funny, that goal actually happened. You know, I was in the gondola looking down. It happened right in front of me. And so I got a really good view of like the confusion on the ice, you know, Kuznetsov is looking at Ovechkin. He's like, did I just steal your goal? Ovechkin's like, dude, did you just steal my goal? And like, you know, Backstrom comes in and they're like, what just happened? Like no one knew what
happened. Somebody grabbed the puck.
Kuznetsov went and grabbed the puck just in case. But I think he kind of knew that he knocked it over the line. Well, after the game, I asked him, I was like, did you just chisel a goal from the goal from Ovechkin? He was like, what do you want me to do? Myers was on my back. Like, it was a close game. I had to score the goal. And I asked Lars Eller about it. I asked Peter Laviolette about it. They're all like, he did the absolute right thing. Like, you can't wait for that puck to maybe skitter and spin over the line to see if Ovi's going to get his goal. He had to do what he did, but it could have been, I mean, for a moment, it really was confusing. I mean, we're sitting there in the press box and we're looking at the score. You know, we're looking at the laptop. We're looking at the Jumbotron. We're trying to figure out, okay, who's going to get this goal? And, when it was announced with Kuznetsov, I was like, oh, okay, well, you know, now he's going to have to keep firing. Ovi's going to have to keep firing pucks to the net and try to get it next.
I just thought it was amazing that the players didn't come off the bench during that occasion. So give me an idea of Ovi, the person that you first met, and Ovi, the person now.
Well, you know, when he first came over, you know, he was a young man full of energy. His quotes were amazing. He was fearless in media conferences. I mean, Russian machine never breaks. It felt like he was, you know, he was very brash. He was very sure of his abilities and wasn't afraid to maybe hurt some feelings with what he said. And he made a lot of headlines. You know, he did some celebrations, the hot stick celebration. He did things that got a lot of attention. You know, he's grown up. You know, he's changed. He's changed the way he deals with the media. He's a little more reserved. I feel like he probably got burned a few times, in that 2010, 11, 12 range. Maybe Don Cherry said some stuff about him that kind of hurt his feelings. And so he pulled back a little bit. He's a more serious person now. He's a family person now. You know, he's married with two children. He's changed a lot. And, you know, these past 3 weeks, I mean, we got to talk about it. It's been difficult for him. You know, he's getting a lot of heat on social media for his, past support for Vladimir Putin. And it's weighed on him. Yeah. You know, I can, as a person who's covered him all this time, I can see, you know, that he's burdened a little bit by some of the criticism he's facing. And, you know, he understands that he can't really come out and say everything that he wants to say. And so these last couple of weeks have been kind of strange. It's like, I don't want to say there's a dark cloud hanging over his head, but it was like he's chasing history and this should be a time of pure excitement and enjoyment. And, you know, I'm not sure, you know, that it unfolded that way for him. I mean, you know, he was happy last night, obviously, but you know, he's been weighed down by what's going on in the world.
Do you think it's affected his play?
I mean, you look at the numbers, and I don't think so. I mean, you know, he's been a pretty consistent producer all year. I would say no, but you know, right now his wife and his kids they're in Moscow right now. He's kind of alone. Like he's going through this through all you know, all these emotions and maybe conflicted feelings about things. Like he's dealing with this by himself. You don't want to you know make him out to be some sympathy case, but you know it's. No, this hasn't been an easy period for him.
What do you think he'd say if he did talk, if he had or wanted to grab that podium and say everything he wanted to say?
You know, I asked him several very pointed questions when the invasion first happened, and you know he came out and he said the two lines that stood out to me from that news conference were Putin's my president. And please, no more war. I mean, clearly he doesn't want to see the atrocities and the blood and the death and the carnage that's happening over there. I think he's also a proud Russian. So I think there's some conflicted feelings, which is part of the reason why, you know, I asked him last night. I mean, I didn't ask him specifically about the invasion because he kind of ended the news conference when I brought up the last 2 weeks. He said, I'm a hockey player. You know, I'm here to play hockey. And he pretty much ended the conversation right there, which, but it, you know, gave a solid answer. It's hard. It's hard for him right now to kind of, you know, maybe articulate, and he knows he probably can't, you know, so he's trying to kind of avoid it, but it's, you know, it's real life stuff. And I think there's some internal struggles going on there.
Are you surprised that he's in this position to give a run at Wayne Gretzky's record?
You know, I would say there was a time a few years ago when the pandemic first began, when, you know, the league was shut down and there was so much uncertainty. I was like, this guy is going to have his chance at number one ruined by a global pandemic. What are the chances of this happening? Like, I didn't even know, like, we're all around the same age. Like, we haven't been through this kind of stuff before. No. So yeah, I would say in March 2020, I was like, he might have to settle for number two. You know, this may not happen. And then he turned back the clock and he you know, started scoring goals like he did a few years ago. And all of a sudden it was like, game on, you know, game on. He might get this done. And, you know, so I've talked to some people who do advanced analytics and kind of can compare aging curves. And, you know, I'm actually working on a story for The Athletic about that right now. And if he continues on the trajectory he's on right now, he is defying the age curve right now. The models are showing that he could end up with like 930 goals. Like, he might just blow past Gretzky and get like another 30, 40 goals on top of that, especially if he signs, let's say he's in the first year of a 5-year extension. Yeah. Let's say he adds another year or two on that. He might end up with 925, 930 goals. And he might have to, if Austin Matthews keeps scoring the way he is, he might need to get to 900 to stay number one.
So hold on. We're about the same age. So you're 25 too?
26.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that I get that straight. Who do you think, one thing that's always amazed me about Ovi is he's continued to score through different coaches and different styles.
Yeah.
Was Gabby the most important coach in his career, or who do you think kept this thing going or allowed him to get to this spot?
I do think Gabby was very important because he kind of unleashed the Rock the Red era, the kind of run and gun, the, you know, defense is optional kind of, you know, system that they played. I know Boudreau, if you were listening to this, would be like, I never said defense was optional. I said possession was optimal. You know, like it was just a different way of looking at the game. And I do feel like that instilled the confidence that allowed him to score those 65, you know, that 65 goal season. And a lot of those 50 goal seasons happened under Boudreau. So I think that gave him a lot of the numbers to kind of get to where he is now. I think Boudreau gave him the confidence that he's a leader. I mean, he was the first coach. So he only had Glenn Hamlin before that. So, I mean, he was his second coach, but he was the first to say, Alex, this is your team. We are going to go as far as you take us. This is your team. This is your city. This is the Alex Ovechkin show. We're just in your world right now. He needed to hear that. He needed to have someone tell him that, this is your show, bro. Go and do your thing. And, you know, named him captain and all that stuff. And I do think he might have been the most consequential coach in his career. But, you know, there have been other twists and turns, you know. Then there was the Dale Hunter era, short era, yeah, where, you know, he was skating 14 minutes a night because Dale didn't like the way he played defense, didn't like his play without the puck, didn't like the me attitude. That kind of humbled him a little bit after the high-flying years of Boudreau. And then Barry Trotz came along and showed him that, hey, if you play better defense, you're going to have the puck at the other end more. And, you know, and that kind of, you know, bled into, you know, the way Peter Laviolette coaches him too. So, you know, I would say over the course of his 17 years, these last 3 or 4 years, I'm not going to say he's a 200-foot forward, but I mean, this is the most two-way that he's been. And I think you could even make the strong argument that, you know, this is the best he has played in terms of helping the team win.
How important is the cup to his resume as he chases the all-time goals record?
Essential. Yeah. Essential. I mean, it would have been a little hollow, I think, for him. I think for the fans. I think for the historians of the game, for his critics. I think it absolutely had to happen. You know, if you're being honest, if you could inject Ovechkin with some truth serum and ask him, you know, have you achieved, you know, everything that you wanted to achieve? He would say, I want to be number one in goals. I've got one Stanley Cup. I feel like I should be working on number three, on cup number three. I do feel like we've missed some opportunities, at least one, where we were the best team in the league and we just didn't get it done in the playoffs. You talk to people in and around the team, and there were a handful of teams where they and I think even objectively, you can look at the roster and go, that was the best team in the league, and they just choked. They just didn't get it done. The year where they lost to Montreal in seven, I mean, that should have been a championship year. You ask some of the old heads who were here at kind of when the transition was happening. You ask a guy like Ole Kolzig, and he'll tell you that first year when Boudreau came on, they went from last place to first place in the Southeast Division, and then they got bounced in the first round by Philadelphia in overtime of Game 7 when Joffrey Lupul stepped on someone's Tom Bodhi stick or something. Like, you know, that was a year where if they had scored that goal, I think some people in that room think like that might have been the year. Because I mean, we know how random the NHL playoffs are. You look at the pathways, you look at the matchups, and you know, I've covered all of them, and I do feel like, and I think Alex would feel like, there should have been another one in there, and he should be working on number three right now, which I think is why he's so determined right now. Is he knows he's running out of time. He's 36 years old. Like if they're going to make another run, it's got to happen here in the next 2 years. Or then it really is just going to be Ovi chasing Gretzky with a bunch of young guys around him. I'm not sure. I'm not so sure he's ready for that.
It just feels like Ovi's always chasing somebody, whether it's Gretzky or Sid, but there's always somebody that he's trying to measure up to. And he might should end up being the all-time greatest goal scorer.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I wrestle with this all the time. It's so hard, Darren, to compare eras. Mm-hmm. But I mean, go back, and then this is not putting down anything, because you can talk about, well, Alex benefited from better training and better nutrition and better systems and better, you know, carbon sticks and skates that weigh, you know, nothing. Go back and watch some of the goals that were scored 30, 40 years ago. And it's like, in my mind, he already is the greatest goal scorer of all time. Now, people will say, well, if you want to be the greatest, you have to have more goals than Wayne Gretzky. I get it. I think he gets it. But it's not an apples to apples comparison, in my opinion. You could make the argument, Darren, that the position that has changed the most in professional sports, I'm talking all professional sports, over the last 30, 40 years is goaltender in hockey. I mean, there used to be 5'7" dudes playing goalie. Now they're 6'7" in these enormous pads. And they have these, you know, they're playing butterfly and reverse RH or VH or whatever they call it. I don't get all of it. I pay attention to the forwards. But the technique and just how they cut off the angle, and it's not just, and so the goaltending position has changed, but look at the way guys collapse on the net. Look at when Ovi loads up for that one timer. A wing comes over, a center comes over, a defenseman. You got to get the puck through like four people now.
Yeah.
Back when other people were racking up all these goals, like they were scoring wraparounds on breakaways because they knew they could just beat the goalie, you know, around the net before he got there. I mean, that doesn't happen anymore. And so in my mind, and I think probably the advanced analytics would also back this up. He's already the greatest goal scorer, but just to cement his legacy, he's got to do it. He's got to do the thing, right? Yeah. He's got to get to 895.
Thank you for the RVH and all that breakdown, and not trying to pretend you know what you're talking about, because I hear all these people this. I'm like, you don't know what the heck you're doing. You're just throwing out letters.
My kid's a left wing. I pay attention to forwards. I don't really pretend to know.
I hear your son's.
But I see your goalie mask, so I know that's your strength.
Your son's a good player.
He's all right. He's all right. Yeah, he's all right.
Well, I got word. A little birdie whispered in my ear.
You know, he just turned 18. He's a AAA player who's transitioning to junior hockey. We'll see how it goes. He's got to work hard. It's you know what happens as you move that so-called pyramid, you find out how hard it is and how tight it gets and how little difference there is between you and other players. So we'll see how it goes. He loves it. He loves it, and it's great as a dad too, to like, this is what I do. Yeah. So it's great to have someone in the house. Like, that's all we talk about. It's great to connect with them on, you know, on that level.
I want to loop back to that, but can Ovi be the all-time greatest goal scorer and not be the greatest player of his generation?
Yes, I think that those are mutually exclusive. I don't think those have to be the same thing. No,
it's weird though.
It is weird. It is weird, but you know, so goal scoring is the hardest, in my opinion, is the hardest thing to do in hockey. It's the most important thing to do. That's how you win games. But I do feel like there are some other players who have exerted great influence over their teams and have won multiple championships. You know, I'm just kind of, you know, thinking out loud here. You know, I'm thinking about Victor Hedman. You know, I'm thinking about Andrei Vasilevsky. I'm thinking about, you know, Patrick Kane and Jonathan Toews. You know, I'm thinking about guys who, you know, it'd be hard for me to sit here right now and say Ovechkin is clear, you know, without any argument, is the greatest player of his generation. Greatest goal scorer, 100%. Greatest player, I think there's some room for argument.
Yeah, because Sid and Ovi have had that rivalry.
Oh, Sidney Crosby. How did I forget? Yeah.
Did you go back and watch the commercial, the promo that Sid and Ovi did back in the Dallas All-Star game? Have you ever gone back?
First my memory.
Remember they were he was pranking Sidney with the room service? Yeah. I just did that during Ovi's chase. I went back because we were talking. I was trying to educate the young kids around the office about this. And I went back and watching the luggage cart going down the hall and room service and stuff. It's amazing to see. Of course, they're young, but to see how really they were kids.
Kids, fresh-faced kids. Yeah, whenever I see those old pictures of either one of them, and now they're kind of grizzled veterans with kind of scruffy beards. I mean, less so on Sid, but you know, you can see the age lines on their faces, and it's like, you know, it reminds me, it's like, now I'm old, because I was older when I was covering them, you know, kind of. But speaking of relationships and just how things have evolved, you know, one thing that I've always found interesting is how their relationship has changed. How there's a mutual respect and admiration for one another, where I mean there were some times you know, in the 10s, 11, 12s, in that range, where they did not like each other.
It was frosty.
Oh, yeah, it was frosty. I mean, there were times where they had, you know, where they were both going, I mean, you can find it on YouTube, where they were going for line changes in the playoffs, and they bumped, and, you know, Sid looked at Ovi like, what's up, dude? And, you know, Ovi went to the bench and did the you're too chicken to fight. I mean, like they did not like each other. Frosty is probably a polite way of putting it. I mean, but now you see them at the All-Star games, and they're palling around, and they're talking about, you know, things that have happened in the past, and just, you know, the game, and admiring what each has done for the game. Because remember, when they came in the league, this league was coming out of a lockout. It was in big trouble. Like they went into the lockout, number four sport of the big four. They came out behind NASCAR and other things. Like, they were in trouble. They needed saviors. And those two guys, I wouldn't say reluctantly, but it was put on them. And they did it all, and they carry. I mean, they brought the game back almost single-handedly. I mean, there were a lot of other guys, but it was the league built their marketing campaign around those two guys, and they delivered.
If you text Ovi and ask him, what's your favorite goal? Not your greatest goal, but your favorite goal. What do you think he'd text back to you?
So I've asked him this question before. I think there were two. There are two that he would come back with, and there was one. The goal in Arizona, the one behind it
on Bush. Yeah,
on Bush. Can I tell you a funny story about that?
Yeah,
that was a holiday. It was an afternoon game. The Capitals were firmly in command. It was 4-0, 5-0. I'm writing my story for the Washington Post. I'm clicking away. You know, the game story is mostly written. I go, wait a minute, where's my plug? I need to get out of here. My flight's in 3 hours. I reach down to get the plug, and then the crowd goes crazy. I'm like, oh, crap, that guy's missed a goal. What happened? And I look up at the Jumbotron. I'm like, what? Did that really just happen? Did I just, like, this
you
really?
You missed it?
I totally did not see it. I was in the building. I was on press row. There was no media covering the team. It was just me. There might have been a guy from the Arizona Republic, you know, like 30 feet down from me. Yeah. So then this all happens. I'm like, wait a minute. I think something really crazy just happened. And then they showed the replay on the Jumbotron. They showed Wayne on the bench looking up. And that's when I was like, oh my God, get me rewrite. I got to write a whole other story, cancel my flight. I'm going to be here for a couple of days writing about this goal. So I would say Ovi would put that up there for sure. I mean, that really put him on the map. I mean, in terms of mainstream, I mean, that was number one play on SportsCenter. I mean, that I remember at the Washington Post, I wrote a game story leading with that, with Wayne Gretzky quoted, first quote of the story. Our business guy wrote a story about how this could be a marketing, you know, an on-ramp to some marketing stuff for Ovi, and it turned out to be. But then the other goal was against the Canadiens. And I don't remember the exact year, but anyone who has followed Ovi knows this goal. He puts the puck off the boards, spins Rowan Hamrlik around like a top, goes and collects the puck, races in like a freight train, runs Carey Price over, and the puck and Ovi go into the net for the goal. And it was because that was a mix of skill.
Yeah,
that was also a mix of the brute strength that he played with at that time in his career. Now, he dialed back some of that physicality out of necessity, but it just – I think he would put that those two goals, but you know, to me, that goal against the Canadiens, I mean, that really, when he was at the height of his powers, of his physicality and everything, like, that just to me exemplified what he was, or you know, how he was a game changer. I mean, there was no one really that could do that before him. I mean, there were power forwards. I'm not sure anyone had that kind of stick skill.
How long after he scored the goal on Bush in Arizona did you admit to your boss that you didn't see it?
It might have been weeks. I mean, I was in the building. I was on press row. I was there. I was doing my job. I was just, it was one of those things where, you know, you're playing a terrible team.
Yeah.
You know, you got to fly. Rarely as a sports writer do you fly out at night, but it was MLK weekend. So like, I think it was like a Monday game. Like, I could get out that night and fly back across the country. I could get home, you know, see my family for a minute, you know, so I was kind of scrambling to get out. So I'm reaching down to unplug my laptop and I missed quite possibly the greatest moment in NHL history.
Oh, that's the best part about doing this podcast is these stories that come out of nowhere. Hey, your son, is he a hockey player because you're into hockey and you cover the game, or do you have roots in hockey before you started covering the Capitals?
Yeah, so I played growing up, not at a very high level at all. I grew up in Maryland. My parents became friendly with a family that was on our street that came from Buffalo. They had a kid who played. That's how I got introduced.
That's so cool. That's the Canadian way right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, my dad is, you know, from Sudan. You know, he was a soccer player, you know, like he was, my mom, not an athlete. So that's how I got into it. And so that's how I fell in love with the game. You know, probably at 12 years old, somewhere in that range. I played through high school, but like, again, I never played at anything close to like prospect level hockey. Like, it was just purely for fun. And so my kid didn't really have a choice. You know, when he turned four, I'd already kind of seen the pathway. I kind of knew what you had to do. Got him on the skates at 4 years old and he fell in love with it too. So I don't have to push him. Like, he's, you know, he pushes me like, hey, can we get on? You know, I know the season's over, but can I get on ice a little more tomorrow? Can you see if the rink's available here? You know, I just want to work on my shot a little bit. So, as any hockey dad knows, I mean, it's an incredible bond. You spend so much time, especially on the East Coast here, when you're where we are, all the good hockey's north. Yeah. So, like, the number of hours you spend going up 95 to New Jersey and Boston and Connecticut and wherever else, that's just bonding time with your kid. You know, I have a daughter, you know, awesome. No, not a whole lot of interest in hockey. We connect on other levels, you know, but with my son, it's, you know, it's hockey all the time. Like he's probably in class, I'm going to get text messages from him on his lunch breaks. He'll be sending me highlights from Twitter. Like, did you see what McDavid did last night? Did you see this? And I'm like, of course I saw. That's my job. Of course I saw it. But yeah, that was nice. So it's a lot of fun.
The odd time he'll send you something that you haven't seen though, right?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
But a lot of it also, Darren, is me saying, hey, look at this goal. You need to play this way. You know, you know, trying to say, hey, you, this kind of, that goal that Evander Kane scored or whatever it was, you know, that I think that might have been my last text to him actually was an Evander Kane play. And I was like, you can do this. Like, this is the kind of game, this is the kind of game I want you to kind of move. And I'll get back up. I get it. Okay. I got it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of back and forth there.
At least you're like easing him in by using a player that that he can easily achieve the level in Kane. Like, you're not picking a superstar or anything like that.
You know, it's funny. That's usually my response is, yeah, I'll get right on that, Dad.
Yeah.
You know, I'll just, yeah, no problem.
Has he met Ovi?
A couple times. You know, he played for the Washington Little Capitals. That's the local AAA team for a few years when he was younger. So they were in the same facility. Mm-hmm. So, like, you know, I'd be writing my story while he's getting ready for practice and Ovechkin is missing, you know, is finishing up his – you know, workout, and they'd cross paths. I don't know if he had long conversations with them, but, you know, actually not that long ago, earlier this season, we were leaving the parking lot. I was driving my son to a tournament in like New Jersey. And so we're leaving as Ovechkin is walking out and he elbowed me, "Hey, is that Ovi?" I was like, "Yeah." So, you know, we actually had to cross and Ovi was like, "Hey guys, how's it going? Where are you going?" I was like, "Oh, we're going to New Jersey for a tournament." He goes, "All right, well, good luck, man. Good luck." And so, you know, we drive off and, you know, he looks at me, he goes, "Alex Ovechkin just wished me good luck in my 17-year-old triple A tournament. That's amazing." I was like, "You know, you're a lucky kid."
My heart would be exploding as a dad.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. He had a teammate. He had a teammate in the car too, yeah. who also lost his mind. Who had been around a lot less than him. You know, so he didn't really, to him that was a really big deal to that kid.
Hey, Capitals going to do anything at the deadline? I'm seeing. I'm hearing. I'm wondering. Yeah,
I think there was a time maybe 2 or 3 weeks ago when they were really struggling. They had lost 6 in a row.
Yeah. Home. Well, Brian came out with a big statement.
Yeah, and since then, I want to say they're 5-0-1. I mean, they've really kind of turned. I don't want to say that McClellan said what he said, and then everyone saw those comments were like, "Whoa, the GM doesn't believe in us. We need to pick this up." But this coincides with what he said, and they've been really good. And I think that if there was any doubt in his mind, I think he now realizes, okay, this team's still good. This team is still good. You know, the window is closing. But we got to maximize this. And so, you know, I look at the holes in this roster and they're not many big holes, but you look at goaltending experience, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury has been the guy they've wanted. I know a lot of other teams want him too. He's the guy that they're not going to go for Jonas Korpisalo. They already have good goalies. That they need a guy who has won Stanley Cups, who can settle things down, who can help the young guys, whether either by playing or by preparation or by telling them what they need to do. They need someone like that. You know, they thought they had in Henrik Lundqvist a couple of years ago and then, you know, had the heart issues. And they went out and got Craig Anderson last year. And then they don't re-sign him. And then he goes to Buffalo and he's having an outstanding season. They have to be like, "Where was this last year?"
Exactly. Yeah.
And then I would say the other position, I feel like they want more depth in the middle six. You know, they would love a left wing who can also play center. You know, they got Connor McMichael, who's a rookie and is going to be really good. I think they're a little, I don't want to say concerned, but
unsure.
A little unsure. Like, he doesn't have a track record of being able to play in those heavy playoff games. I mean, you know, that's the area where he's got to get better now is, you know, is winning corner battles and being a little heavier. And, you know, you can't really leave any stone unturned or leave any doubt. I mean, like, if you feel like you need to fortify that middle six, you got to go out and get it. Daniel Sprong has been in and out of the lineup. I'm not sure Peter Laviolette trusts him a whole lot either. So those are two guys that I look at where if they can make a move that makes sense, who can either come in and, you know, push one out or just come in and just fortify that middle group. Also, they had injuries there too. You know, Anthony Mantha was out for a long time. T.J. Oshie has had a lot of health and injury issues this year. If one of those guys go out and get it, Lars Eller's had some stuff. I mean, if one of those guys goes out and you got to go back down to Hershey and bring it, I mean, that's a lot of inexperience in that middle six. So I think they're going to, you know, you look at the teams that are out of it, you know, Seattle's got a bunch of middle six guys that are going to be available. You know, Vancouver's got a few. I mean, there are some players that I think McClellan's going to target.
If they can't get Fleury, Derek, do they stand with what they've got?
I think so. I think so. And look, Vitek Vanacek, you know, he doesn't have a long track record. He missed an entire month with a concussion. He missed all of February with a concussion. Yeah. But you look at January and you look at this month, he's been like a top 10 goaltender in the league. Like, he's really good. You know, they slow roasted him. I mean, he was in Hershey a long time marinating down there, and they were never quite sure. And they recruited over him several times, and they drafted Ilya Samsonov, and they signed Henrik Lundqvist. Whenever he thought it was his turn, they like went out and got somebody. And he was like, really? And so he finally got his opportunity last year, and he's been pretty good. Is he good enough to win a Stanley Cup? I think that's probably the question that's in the back of their head is he ready right now with, you know, I don't know off the top of my head, but 70 starts or so. Like, is he ready right now to do it? And if he were to falter, remember last year in the playoffs, he got hurt in game one.
Yeah.
And that kind of was, you know, that kind of sent everything spiraling right there. Like, you would like to, if something were to happen, have someone you can turn to, or have Marc-Andre Fleury as your number one and have Vanecek ready to go if something were to happen to him. So we'll see. One thing that my gut and my sources tell me that, you know, they really are hesitant to part with one of their top prospects and or one of their really high picks, a first round pick.
Because the window might be closing and they got to keep that stuff in the cupboard?
That's 100%, Darren. They're walking a fine line here. It's like capitalizing on these last couple of years, 3 years of the Ovi, Backstrom, Carlson era. But also, like, you can see what's coming down the road. And if you keep trading Hendricks, Lapierres, and Connor McMichaels in your first
round, becomes Chicago.
Yes, when you get there, the cupboard is completely barren. Yeah. And then you really got to just burn it down and start over. They would like to kind of transition a little bit, where they go from contender to, you know, fringe, and then have to kind of work their way back without completely falling off. Also, this year is a pretty good draft, especially at the high end. Like, you want to have that first round pick if you can. I think Marc-Andre Fleury is the one player that might be able to, you know, where they might have to go, all right, guys, but other than that, I think they're going to do their best to hang on to those top assets.
Yeah, I'm not sure Pittsburgh makes any moves. We've heard from Berkey come out and say that that they got to kind of do the similar thing, like hold on or start stop giving away assets. So who's their top competition? Who are they fearful of that makes a big deal? And what do you think that big deal is?
Yeah, I think, you know, they're worried about Edmonton. I think that, you know, they're kind of looking. I see them as kind of teams on similar trajectories. Maybe Edmonton's younger and kind of ascending in the Capitals, but they kind of need the same things.
Yeah,
I think that's a team they're worried about. I would say that's number one, two, and three really on their list of teams they're worried about in terms of their competition for Fleury. But I mean, you know, I've been reading reports that, you know, it's not a guarantee that Fleury's going to even want to be moved. I mean, they've kind of put the ball in his court and said, hey, you want to go, let us know. If you don't, let us know. You know, like, you know, I've also seen the reports where, you know, maybe Fleury's a little hesitant because he was a former Penguin, and does he really want to come and?
Do you think that matters? I think it'd be amazing.
I hope it doesn't. Like, it's
like Ovi and Fleury together would be the most fun in hockey.
It would be. It'd be amazing, and not to mention, like, half the roster is former Penguins anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Connor Sheary, Justin Schultz. I mean, they got so many. They love their former Penguins here in D.C. It would just be adding another one to the cupboard.
Any chance Giroux goes there?
Yeah, I wouldn't rule it out. They would have to get super creative because with Bruce Mantha came back on the salary cap, they really went up against it again. But then remember, Carl Hagelin suffered that bad eye injury. So he's on LTI now. So they have a little more cushion. One thing I've learned, Darren, in figuring out, so the Caps have a very, very good cap manager. One of the best. Don Fishman is his name. Is when there's a will, there's a way. Like, if you want to make it work, you can dump a salary to that team. You can get that team to hold back a little bit of salary. You can trade it through another person to get it. I mean, if you want to make it work, you can. It just makes it more complicated. Maybe you end up spending more assets. But I think Giroux would be a welcome addition. You know, I think his services are going to be highly sought after. I don't know if the Caps are going to be willing to give up what it takes. But I'll tell you this about covering McClellan. I've covered all of his seasons since he took over in 14-15. He's aggressive. He's aggressive. Like, he doesn't do half measures. Like, I mean, last year, You know, you're getting around the deadline time. I'm like, oh, it looks like nothing happened. You know, I'm texting people like, you guys done? Nothing more? They're like, hold on. Like, literally, hold on. Something really big just happened. And I was like, what just? And, you know, Jacob Vrana and Richard Ponick to Detroit and Anthony Mantha to Washington. I mean, he's aggressive. So if he makes a big splash on Monday, I'll be ready for it. He's done it in the past. Kevin Shattenkirk, he was the cream of the crop a few years prior. Didn't end up working out, but he took his hack at it, right? He was the best player available on the market. He got him. So, yeah, Monday's going to be a busy day, I think.
Do you think Chychrun ends up going?
What's the latest on his injury status?
It's 2 weeks.
Not as serious. I think that team is going to be selling some parts. It's funny. McClellan has added a defenseman every single year at the deadline for depth. He's a big believer in, it takes eight guys, like eight NHL defensemen to get through a long playoff run. I think for the first time, he kind of feels like I'm okay with this group. I'm okay with this group. You know, we've got seven, and we've got a couple down in Hershey who could, you know, fill in a little bit. I'm not saying he's not going to get a defenseman, because his track record says he's going to get a defenseman. I just feel like it's not as much a priority as it has been in years past. I think goaltender, middle six forward, and, you know, maybe another depth piece. But I'm glad I'm not in his shoes, because this is one of the more difficult kind of deadlines to navigate, because you're trying to get a feel for, okay, does this team have it? If they have it, do we go all in?
Or who in the East thinks they have it?
That's the other thing.
Yeah, no, Tampa. That's it, because they've done it.
Yeah, Tampa, Florida, Carolina. I think those teams are, you know, I think the Capitals look at them. So let me back.
Florida hasn't won a series since my buddy Doug coached them.
That is true. That is, you're 100. They do not have track record. 100%. One thing that McClellan told me about a week ago, or maybe a little more than a week ago, that I found interesting was he's a truth teller, which is part of the reason why the PR department hides him, because he can't help himself. he said, you know, I the way I see our team, you know, the start of the year, I felt like we were at the top of that second tier of contender. You know, there was that group up there, four teams that should be considered legit contenders. We were at the top. When they were struggling was when he talked to reporters, when they were at the bottom of that downswing. He was like, now I feel like we're at the bottom of that second tier. And that to me was a pretty illuminating statement. I was like, whoa, so you're almost falling into third tier, which probably is not really a contender. Mm-hmm. But then they turned it around and they reeled off five wins in six games, 5-0-1, and you know, a couple of big wins in there too, you know, one over Carolina. So the vibe in DC is, you know, when they're playing the way they're playing right now, they could make some noise if they get the right matchups and they stay healthy. And so just going back to what I was saying about McClellan, it's walking that tightrope. It's like, do we push all the chips to the middle of the table again, or we can see what's on the horizon. We know we're going to have to rebuild here sooner rather than later. Like, that's a very tough position to be in as a manager, I think.
As a longtime NHL reporter, would you like to cover the Toronto Maple Leafs beat for 1 week?
I did, just for the pretty fun. Much. I mean, not in that pressure cooker of a market, but like the high flying Capitals of the Boudreau era. Like, I every time I see, oh, the Leafs gave up four goals or more for the last 75 games, I'm like, I covered that team. That was the Capitals back in 2010, where I swear every
looking game, for a goalie, the Capitals looking for a goalie.
Every game was like 6-3 or 6-4. Yeah. I mean, and they would go up like 6-1, and then the other team would come storming back and they'd be hanging on for dear life. And, you know, they had this generational goal scorer. They had these other guys. You know, remember they had the young guns, Alexander Semin and Nicholas Backstrom and Mike Green. Yeah. Like, they were just a fun. And I feel like the Maple Leafs are kind of there. That's kind of who they are. Just as an outside observer, you just hope that they learned those lessons and they don't wait as long as the Capitals did to get serious about winning, because that window closes. You get old, guys get injured, cap problems come up, and you start trading guys. So you hope they realize sooner rather than later what they've got, and they capitalize on it, because, you know, it'd be a shame if at the end of, you know, this group of Maple Leafs, you know, they get one cup or one chance at a cup. You know, it would feel kind of similar to the Caps. Like they should get a couple.
Did you ever get a double on the moped with Mike Green?
I did not. I had some fun with Mike. Mike was a great quote.
I loved him.
He was the best. So here's how, when he retired a couple of years ago, he actually called me. He was like, "Hey, Derek, how's it going?" I was like, "Hey, Mike." He's like, "You want to write my retirement story?" I was like, "I'd be honored to." And that doesn't happen very much. You know, it was actually pretty cool. He said, "You know, I'm going to officially retire, and, you know, I'd like you to tell my story." And we had a great conversation. We had a long talk, and, you know, we kind of reminisced about some of those times. One of my most fun Mike Green moments. So do you remember MTV Cribs?
Yeah.
So they did an episode with him, and I wrote a story about MTV Cribs doing Mike Green. And so I called him, and he was like, "Yeah, just come over to my place. You know, the cameras are going to show up here. I'm going to put the Lambo over here and the Escalade over here. And, you know, you can just hang out with my boys, and, you know, we'll do the interview at some point." That was the first time I was ever like around the pro athlete, like with their friend, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
With not in a reporting setting necessarily. But
they're themselves. Yeah.
Just, yeah. And I got to know him pretty well that day, and had a blast. And that story turned out really fun. And he's always kind of had a special place kind of in my heart, because he was a normal dude. You know, he didn't grow up with much in Calgary. He wasn't a hockey robot who was trained from, you know, a young age to hold the media over here. He didn't take himself too seriously. He was just a guy, you know, who happened to be really, really, really good at hockey. And so he was just fun to cover. You know, one more quick story. I wrote a story. He gained some weight at one point in his career, like had a weight problem, like maybe put on 20, 25 pounds, and the Caps had some issues with it, and they were trying to help him kind of work through it. And so I wrote this story, and I think he knew what I was working on, but I don't think he knew how it was going to come out. And when it actually published, oh my God, he was so mad at me. Oh my God, he was so mad at me. I remember walking into the room and just hearing, "Where's Tark?" And I was like, uh-oh. And so we talked about it. I mean, look, beat writers, you know, if you aren't pissing someone off at some point, you're not doing your job right.
Yeah.
But I remember that conversation was, it was a little uncomfortable, but again, great guy. And just, he was so good. I mean, apologies to John Carlson. John Carlson's really good too.
Yeah.
But the way Mike Green could put the puck exactly where Alex Ovechkin needed it for that one-timer, I'm not so sure anyone has been able to do it as well or as smoothly or as seamlessly as Green did. Now, Carlson, I mean, look, he racks up a lot of points. He's really good at it too. But the way Green did the no-look, just the right pace at the right spot, and just Ovi hammered those shots, that it was just a lot of fun to watch.
Did you get to sit in the Lambo?
Did I sit in that Lambo? I'm not sure I ever sat in it. No, I've ridden in. I have ridden in a couple of Ovi's cars for different things we were working on. He's also a car guy who has insanely fast cars.
Did he ever yell at you for something that you wrote?
Yes, many times. Oh yeah, many times. The one time we really got into it was many years ago. He had a couple of down years, yeah. A couple of, like 30 goal seasons.
And I thought he was done.
Yeah, was Ovi over? Like, is this? And I wrote a really big story and kind of detailing what people in and around the team were saying is happening. And he didn't like it. And we're on the island. We're in the old Nassau Coliseum, and, you know, we had to hash it out. It was a conversation that might have got a little loud a couple of times, but it was a conversation between two men. He understands that my job is, you know, to describe what I'm seeing and talk to my sources about what's going on. And, you know, he just felt like it was a little too personal. I think there were some personal things in there, but part of the story, in my opinion. Over the years, there have been a handful of times where I've gotten under his skin.
So knowing that, when you went through Edmonton last week, did he give Jim Matheson a big hug after his back and forth with Leon?
I did have a beer with Jim Matheson. Yeah. That didn't come up. We went to some, the mask stuff is ending and we were kind of out and about again. So a bunch of reporters, actually the first time in 2 years where I've actually gone out with my brethren.
Sherlock's? Did you go to Sherlock's?
We went to an Irish place.
Yes, I know it. The second floor, yes.
No, it wasn't Sherlock's. It had an H. It was like... Steve Wino wouldn't know what it was. It was about a 3-block walk from the arena. I wish I could remember the name of it, but it was an Irish bar that was totally packed with Oilers fans. Mm. And so they kept trying to send drinks over to the table for Jim.
See, that's a hockey town. When you get into it with a star player and the reporter still gets drinks sent over to him.
That's awesome. And they kept coming over to pose for pictures. I'm like, This is a hockey town.
That's awesome. Find out what bar that is, because now I'm sour that there's another bar other than Sherlock's that everybody's going to. So I got to find out what that is.
I'll send you a text.
This has been so much fun. We've never actually met before, so this is. I was so excited that we were going to have you on and be able to connect. And thanks for the stories about your son. Good luck with that, and continued success with Turner. Are you enjoying that?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a blast. They're great folks to work for. I feel like, I'm still a writer trying to figure out the TV side of things, mm-hmm. but I get so much help, and it's a dream come true. I'm having the time of my life right now. It's a lot of fun.
Well, it's a lot easier transition than a broadcaster trying to write. Trust me on that. that I can guarantee. This has been great. Really appreciate it. And thanks for the stories, pal.
Hey, anytime.
That dude, he can tell a story. I love that. Like, he is, Tarek's the guy that I want to spend 5 hours with having one beer. You ever go for one beer and you end up there for 5 hours and you go, we've been here for 8 hours just sitting around. You probably, the math right there, 5 hours to 8 hours is probably what you're thinking after you've been in the bar that long. But that was a fun conversation. Share, subscribe, and let everybody know because that guy is a star in the making with TNT, and obviously doing some great stuff with The Athletic. Check out his old stuff. And also go back to last week's episode of The Chirp with Cassie Campbell-Pascal, one of my great friends in the sport. Some deadline talk in and around the Calgary Flames and the Western Conference. There's a lot there. And if you're an Olympic medalist, where do you keep your medals? On the wall? In a trophy case? Or like Cassie, it's a much different story. You got to hear that story last week. Looking forward to the NHL trade deadline coming up on the 21st on Monday. Less than a week away as we record this. A couple of teams that really interested. What does Los Angeles do? They've broken through. Do they deviate from the plan and add and go for it this year? I always think back to Nashville and San Jose and Winnipeg. They got to that third round or Stanley Cup final, and you thought they're primed for a big run for years, and just hasn't happened. So does Los Angeles take advantage of this, knowing that they're ahead of schedule, or do they stick to the plan? A couple of other, the Rangers. I'm getting the feeling like Glenn Sather's back in town running the Rangers here, and they're going to go big. Just got that vibe around it, and they're still... People are whispering Patrick Kane. I don't know whether they can do it, but that would be so cool. So watching that, wondering, these are my dark horse picks to do something big. St. Louis, and not necessarily a dark horse, but Minnesota. They've been scuffling a little bit. I still think Fleury's a possibility there. And if everybody's saying, no, Fleury's already said he's not going anywhere. Chicago says he's not going anywhere. My humble opinion, strategic bluff. To raise up the price. Fleury's not going to go anywhere. General managers call around, they up the ante, and that's where you raise the price a little bit, and Fleury has a few more options because more teams are getting involved, trying to push it a little bit because they hear Fleury might not want to go anywhere, so they become a little more creative. That's what I expect there. And Edmonton, Toronto, fascinating stuff. I don't know whether Vegas can do anything because they've got all the injuries right now with 9 regulars out of the lineup, and the cap is an issue, long-term injury relief. They're in LTIR, so I don't know whether anything's going to happen there, but they are another team. I don't know Robin Leonard's status right now, whether they have to go out and get a goaltender. It's going to be fascinating. We'll be all over it next week with a post-trade deadline edition of the Chirp. Thanks to Tarek. Thanks to producer Bob Bender. Listen to Cassie Campbell-Pascal's episode from last week. And if you enjoy this, share it, post it, tweet it, put it on the IG. Come on, people, get on board. This is a train that's going right now. The Chirp with Darren Millard.